This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Jeffrey Smith, and we're going to talk about his new book, very good book, by the way, Genetic Roulette, and we're going to talk about genetically engineered foods. How are you, Jeffrey?
Very good, thank you.
Wow, this is a powerful topic and a powerfully well-done book, by the way.
Thank you.
Really good book. So take a few minutes before we get started. You might have to speak up a little bit and tell us a little bit about you and your company and where people can find you and look this up and read a little bit more about it.
Okay. I'm the executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology. And you can go to responsibletechnology.org. I have been, my first book, Seeds of Deception, is the world's best-selling book on GMOs. It came out in 2003, and it shared stories of how the regulators of our government were taken over by influence by the biotech industry, how scientists who found adverse findings with genetically modified foods were fired, stripped of responsibilities, or forced out, both from government and from private institutions. It showed how reporters that tried to report the problems were forced not to report them or even fired. And it showed basically the dark underbelly of how these dangerous foods got on the market.
Sounds like politics to me.
Exactly. And then what I decided to do was I have traveled to about 30 countries, and I spoke to hundreds of senior political leaders. And I gave them the book, which was written mostly in story format, where it embedded the science and risks of GMOs into these stories of deception and whatnot. But that's a hard way for people to get the science real easily. So what I did is I created a new book called Genetic Roulette, which worked with more than 30 scientists around the world to document all that we know about the health risks. And I put it into easy-to-read two-page spreads. So when I gave it to the Secretary of Agriculture, for example, I said to him, I wrote this book for you. Every two-page spread has a left side, which has an executive summary, and that's all you need to read. So you can flip through the book in 20 minutes and give it to your staff to read the more detailed referenced side on the right page. And he was very appreciative that I didn't give him a big text. So I've been traveling around since the book came out last year to about five continents, giving it to world leaders, presenting it to the European Parliament, basically demonstrating that there's overwhelming, irrefutable evidence of harm related to these genetically engineered foods which are in our diet.
Well, let's start at the very beginning, because we've heard this term, genetically modified foods, but what is that?
Well, you take a gene from one species and you insert it into the DNA of another so that you carry traits between species that would normally never happen. For example, some of the more wild combinations that have existed, they've taken spider genes and put it into goats in the hopes that they can milk the goat to get spiderweb protein to make bulletproof vests. They've put jellyfish genes into pigs so that the noses of the pigs glow in the dark. They have a goat that has 15% human genes. In fact, they have rice growing in Kansas that has human genes in it to produce pharmaceuticals.
Really?
Now, there are most of the genetically engineered crops, almost every one of them, are in four categories: soy, corn, cotton, and canola. And about 80% of them are designed not to die when sprayed with herbicide. So Roundup Ready soybeans can be sprayed with Roundup herbicide and not die. Liberty Link corn can be sprayed with Liberty herbicide and not die. And it's designed to sell more herbicide for these companies. About 20% are designed to produce their own pesticides. And they have a soil bacterium inserted into them, and so they create a pesticide in every cell and in every bite. And so when we eat this corn, then we're actually eating corn with a pesticide in it.
How do we know what we buy if it's that modified or not?
Well, the FDA, unfortunately, has been told by the White House to promote the biotech industry, and so they ignore the 9 out of 10 Americans that want genetically modified foods labeled for in order to benefit the economics of 5 biotech seed companies. So they don't require labels. In order to avoid GMOs, you have to do one of 4 things. 1, buy organic. 2, buy products that are labeled non-GMO voluntarily by the company. 3, get familiar with the derivatives of soybeans and corn, which are in most processed foods, and avoid those foods with those derivatives, and avoid corn unless you know it's organic. And there's also zucchini and crookneck squash, a little bit of that that's genetically engineered. And there's also papaya from Hawaii that's GMO. So you have to learn what's genetically engineered and avoid the at-risk ingredients. The 4th possibility is to get a shopping guide. And if you go to responsibletechnology.org, there is a shopping guide that you can click to, which lists the brands that have removed or prevented genetically engineered ingredients.
Are those beautiful tomatoes at the grocery store that all look exactly the same? Are those?
No, they're not GMOs. In fact, there's no visible difference between a genetically modified product and a non-GM product. The tomatoes that were genetically engineered and brought to market in 1994, they've been taken off the market a long time ago. There were potatoes put on the market, but they were taken off in 2001. The only crops right now are the soy, corn, cotton, and canola, the Hawaiian papaya, the little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash. But the sugar beet industry wants to introduce genetically modified sugar beets this year so that it will contaminate the entire food supply whenever sugar is listed. So that's very, very bad news. And please tell the food companies, the candy companies that you buy things, anything where you buy sugar, let them know that you don't want to eat genetically modified sugar. Try and stop these people from introducing that. In fact, when Mars and Hershey's in 2001 said they didn't want to use GM sugar, that stopped them then. But now Mars and Hershey's are silent, so we need to get on the ball and stop this.
Gosh, that's terrible. So why would they put that you've got here, cow genes turn pig skin into cow hides? Why would they do that?
Well, a lot of them is just experiments. When they do those kind of wild experiments,
so
they see what's possible.
It's not on the market right now, right?
Pardon?
The meat's not on the market, then, is
no,
it?
No, there's no genetically modified animals that are available for consumption, although animals are the biggest consumers of genetically modified crops. The soy, corn, cotton, and canola all go to animal feed. So unless something is grass-fed or wild-caught or organic, if it's a milk or meat product, it's from an animal that's been fed genetically engineered feed.
What are some of the side effects of the animals eating this?
Well, we see that there's thousands of sick, sterile, and dead animals, according to the farmers who've reported on the results of their livestock that have been fed GM feed. For example, in India, they allowed sheep to graze on genetically modified cotton plants after harvest, and the GM plants apparently caused death in 1 out of every 4 sheep. About 10,000 sheep died in that region. About 25 farmers in the U.S. describe how their pigs became sterile when they ate genetically modified corn. They had false pregnancies or gave birth to bags of water. We have reports from farmers that livestock died in the Philippines and in Germany. When we look at the laboratory studies, the peer-reviewed published feeding studies, we see animals that have been fed GM products have had potentially precancerous cell growth, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, damaged immune system, lesions in the stomach, inflamed kidneys, problems in their livers. Also, in fact, virtually every organ and every system that have been studied shows some kind of damage or significant unexplained change when the animals feed the GM compared to the non-GM varieties.
You talk also in your book that the animals seem to be able to sense the difference. They don't want to eat it.
This is one of the amazing points. There's a farmer I was speaking with recently, and he was one of the first to discover it. He grew some genetically modified corn along with his conventional corn and put it on both sides of a trough and let his cows into the pen, and they all gathered around the side where the non-GM corn was, and they didn't touch the GM corn. He told this to some other farmers, and about six or seven of them repeated the experiment over and over again over 2 years for both cows and pigs. And lo and behold, they wouldn't eat the GM corn when given a choice. The same kind of behavior was seen with geese, with squirrels, with elk, raccoon, deer, mice, and rats. In fact, there was a rats that were had to be force-fed genetically engineered tomatoes by scientists because they wouldn't eat the GM variety, and after that, seven of 20 developed stomach lesions, and another 7 of 40 died within 2 weeks and were replaced in the study.
Once a human ingests it, how long does it take before they start having symptoms, typically?
Well, there's no human clinical trials, and there's no monitoring of humans for what the impact was. So we really don't have any data whatsoever except more anecdotal data or data associated with correlational evidence. For example, soon after genetically modified soy was introduced to the UK, soy allergies there skyrocketed by 50%.
About 50% in one year.
We know that when in a small experiment with GM soy in a skin prick test that they found at least one individual out of eight who was allergic to only the GM soy and did not respond to the non-GM soy. We know that when farm workers in India were harvesting the GM cotton that produced its own pesticide, they developed serious allergic reactions and had to go to the hospital. And they didn't have these reactions when they were harvesting the natural cotton varieties. We know the only human feeding study ever conducted on genetically engineered foods showed that the genes that were inserted into soybeans to make the soybeans resistant to herbicide transferred into the DNA of the bacteria inside the human's intestinal system and continued to function. Now, what this means is long after we stop eating genetically engineered foods, we might still have these foreign proteins produced inside our intestines. Now, one of the genes that's in these GM crops, as I talked about, produces a pesticide in corn. So imagine eating a genetically modified corn chip and having that gene transfer into the DNA of the bacteria inside your intestines. It could turn it, theoretically, into living pesticide factories, possibly for the rest of our life. We don't know. It's one of the serious problems that needs to be studied. There's so few studies going out there, and what they have found is that when they look with an independent laboratory, they're finding a lot of problems.
Well, I can't imagine that you could treat it if it's something that's different like that. How would you treat something like that?
I get that question all the time, and I don't know. I've spoken to medical doctors, and their response is, you know, we've seen a lot of gastrointestinal problems in the last 10 years. Maybe that's the cause. You know, the gut bacteria is so important for humans. It's like a major organ. In fact, there are 10 times more cells in our gut bacteria than there are in our bodies. It's involved with the immune system and with digestion. It even produces minerals and vitamins. And so if we're colonizing our gut bacteria with GM genes, we have no idea what the impacts might be for all of these systems.
Do you think that bovine virus has anything to do with that?
You know, I can't link any particular problem with GMOs because there's been so few studies. We could say generically that the concerns are allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. There's possibilities that dormant viruses can be activated inside the DNA. There's one tragic event that happened in the 1980s where there was a food supplement called L-tryptophan that was produced from genetically modified bacteria. And the process of genetic engineering almost certainly was the cause of the creation of certain contaminants in this food supplement, which was sold over the counter for stress and depression and insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
And these contaminants ended up killing about 100 Americans and causing 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick or become permanently disabled. And it took years to discover that there even was an epidemic going on, and the only reason it was discovered was because the disease had four three simultaneous characteristics. It was acute, so it showed up. People had to go to hospitals right away or doctors. It was the symptoms were rare or unique, and it came on quickly. If all three of those symptoms had not been in place at the same time, if it had been a common disease like cancer, or if it took 20 years for onset, or if it was mild symptoms, it would still be on the market. So it begs the question, are genetically engineered foods associated with the doubling of food-related illnesses in the United States between 94 and 2001? Is it associated with the skyrocketing of autism, of allergies, of obesity, diabetes, ADHD? We don't know because no one is looking. And so this is one of the problems. You'd think that the FDA would protect us, but it turns out the person in charge of GMO policy at the FDA, when they created that policy, was Monsanto's former attorney and later Monsanto's vice president. Monsanto, of course, is the giant biotech company. And the policy that was created said no safety testing is needed whatsoever. We could just put the foods on the market without even telling the FDA. It turns out they based that the policy on the claim that the FDA was not aware of any information showing that the foods from GMOs were significantly different. Now, that claim turns out to be a lie. And we know this because documents were made public from a lawsuit years later showing that the overwhelming consensus among the FDA's own scientists were that genetically engineered foods were inherently unsafe, that they could create allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems, and had urged superiors to acquire the studies, but they were ignored.
What kind of feedback do you get when you go to these government heads?
Well, it really depends. You see, I travel a lot, and where I'm going to a country where the government has a policy of concern and caution, I'm treated very well. I was flown to Poland last year in October and gave a press conference with the environment minister. Poland wants to create a GM to maintain its GM-free status. When I went to Australia in November, I traveled to seven different locations, and in three states I had very big important meetings with ministers of agriculture, and in two states the ministers didn't meet with me. It turns out that in those two states they are very pro-GM, and then they lifted the moratorium on planting. And in the other three states they were open-minded, and they ended up maintaining the moratorium on planting. So it really varies from country to country and from state to state. When I have given my books to politicians who have actually read them, it has changed their opinions. It's started legislation. It's changed the course of some of the regulations in the world. And so that's part of what I do, is to get the word out to these regulators.
Do you know Irvin Laszlo?
No, I don't.
I might like to introduce you to him.
Please.
Look him up on the internet sometime, Irvin Laszlo, and then we'll talk after the show sometime. I'd like for you to know him. He might can help get the word out.
Yes, the thing is, well, there's only a few of us at our institute, but the majority of virtually any demographic I speak to, when I can explain to them what can go wrong, why it can go wrong, how so many of the key assumptions that were used as a basis for safety claims have been overturned, how there's huge numbers of problems out there with GMOs, when I can explain it to someone in about an hour, then the vast majority are ready to change their diet on the spot. And I'm talking not just health-conscious audiences, but medical doctors, parents, business professionals, politicians, anyone who's an eater. And so we have the information now packaged to disperse around the country, along with non-GMO shopping guides that we're going to be preparing for release in June, so that we will be able to drive people's brand choices to non-GM products. And we're looking for organizations to get it out, food stores to distribute the shopping guide and the information, medical professionals, religious organizations, schools, parent groups. And so we have a plan called the Campaign for Healthier Eating in America, which we believe will drive GMOs off the market by reaching a tipping point of consumer rejection against GMOs so that it becomes a marketing liability for the companies that continue to use it in their ingredients.
Yeah, it sounds like the potential for a huge class action.
Well, class action, they take a long time. We think we'll be able to hit the tipping point of consumer rejection before the end of 2009, forcing the food companies to scramble to replace them. In fact, in 1999, 10 years earlier, the European communities reached the tipping point of consumer rejection, and within a single week, virtually every major food company committed to remove GM ingredients.
I have two questions here. One of them is, have they threatened you or anything? Has Monsanto and them threatened you?
You know, it's interesting. I write about the threats all the time. And I wrote about one, some friends of mine read a book before I wrote my first, and they put out an article excerpted from the book or based on the book and announced the book publicly before it was printed. And that alerted Monsanto, who then wrote a threatening letter to the publisher of the book 3 days before the book was to come off the printer. And the publisher was not willing to risk a lawsuit, and so they canceled the publication, and it took about 8 months for them to find another publisher to run with it. So what I did was I did not make it public before I put out Seeds of Deception. I kept it hidden. I didn't tell the industry, I didn't tell anyone, except the people I needed to interview. And so when I put it out, it was a surprise to them, and they didn't want to, you know, step in with a heavy hand at that point, because that could have driven the book to number one. You know, obviously, mm-hmm. they want to keep it hidden, so they just pretended it wasn't there. And as it started to build, it became the world's best-selling book on GMOs. It's translated into 10 languages, so it's had its effect. And now genetic roulette is even more important because it's designed for people to make clear policy decisions based on all the facts, easily accessible. And so it's really challenging them because they don't have the science to defend against it. And so now they're having to think what to do about the fact that this book is in the hands now of regulators and leaders around the world.
How is our government responding to you?
Well, our government is really the worst as far as GMOs go. Dan Glickman was a big biotech cheerleader as the agriculture secretary under Clinton, and he described it well. He said, "What I saw generically from the pro-biotech side was the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good because it was going to solve the problems of the human race and clothe the naked and feed the hungry. And if you're against it, you're Luddites, you're stupid." And that, frankly, was the side our government was on. He said, "You felt like you were almost an alien, disloyal by trying to present an open-minded view." So this was back in the Clinton era, and it's continued through the Bush era, and it continues till today. Now, fortunately, Obama and Hillary both have committed to mandatory labeling of genetically engineered foods if they get into office. So that could reverse everything, because most people not only want labeling, 9 out of 10 want labeling, but most people, about 60%, say they wouldn't eat foods that were genetically engineered if it were labeled. So that will drive it off the market, I believe, because once you give people choice, then in that sense, food democracy is going to certainly eliminate GMOs from the food supply. So that's very good news if one of them gets elected and if one of them follows through with their promise. But I have made presentations to some congressional leaders, and they're very concerned about GMOs and were interested in hearings. I've made presentations to state representatives. In fact, in Vermont, a co-op gave my first book, Seeds of Deception, to all of the state representatives. And then a student in Vermont did a master's thesis on the impact of that book on the passage of the first state regulation on GMOs in the country, which was in Vermont. And it turns out the book had a huge impact. One person said it spread like wildfire and was the basis for every discussion on GMOs once it arrived. When the Seeds of Deception was given to some county supervisors and officials in California, it helped to inspire them to ban the planting of GMOs in Trinity County and in Santa Cruz County. So in the U.S., there are, you know, bright spots of regulators at the county level, at the state level, and even among Congress. But so far, the administration since the early 90s, since the first Bush, have been very pro-GM. In fact, even bullying the rest of the world, trying to force them to eat our genetically engineered foods.
You would think they would realize that they're hurting their own selves.
Well, you know, the reason that they were originally promoting it was that the Council of Competitiveness under Dan Quayle, vice president under Bush, identified GMOs as a way to increase U.S. exports. But it turns out the opposite happened. We now spend $3 to $5 billion extra every year to prop up the prices of these GM crops that no one wants. We've lost our European corn trade. Our soybean trade has shrunk dramatically. Canada lost its canola trade to Europe. Even their honey is unable to be exported there because of contamination from the GM canola plants. It's really been a disaster. The USDA says that they don't see any increase in profits on the farm level, no increase in yields. In fact, there's decreases in profits and yield in many cases. So the technology is actually a bad technology all across the board. But in this government, it's really who you know and not what you know. And it's they, you know, as one person from the FDA said, that in this area, the regulatory agencies have done everything that big agriculture has asked them to do and told them to do. So logic is not in charge. Consumers are not in charge. Food safety is not in charge. It's really the multi-billion-dollar biotech industries which dictate terms about our food supply.
What is the connection with pharmaceuticals?
Well, most of the genetically engineered seed companies were at one time parts of the pharmaceutical companies. Monsanto was owned by Pharmacia. Bayer Pharmacies had Bayer Crop Science, Novartis, etc. Most of them have spun off so that the agriculture group is independent. And that's because there's a lot of consumer pushback on GMOs, and so it's sort of a liability. It doesn't carry the same kind of clear sailing that the pharmaceuticals have, so there's less of a financial arrangement right now.
I didn't realize it had anything to do with supplements until I read that about L-tryptophan. Would we find GMOs in any other kind of medicine?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
The way it works is one of the ways to produce vitamins and a lot of certain drugs is to genetically engineer bacteria or fungus or yeast to turn that microorganism into a factory. So you, like, for example, Monsanto took genes from a cow that normally produce growth hormone in the cow, and they put those genes into E. coli bacteria. And so now the bacteria produces the drug, which they call recombinant bovine growth hormone, which is a genetically engineered hormone that's injected into cows to increase the milk supply. So it turns out this is a very controversial thing. We find that back when the FDA approved it, they based their information on a lot of rigged research. Documents stolen from the FDA showed that when Monsanto wanted to prove that cows were not, that their fertility wasn't impaired because of the drug, they added cows apparently to the study that were pregnant before they were ever injected. When they wanted to show that the hormone was destroyed during pasteurization, they heated the milk 120 times longer than normal. when the scientists complained about some of the tests that were going on, they were fired at the FDA.
Oh, so that means we're eating that every time we eat a piece of meat or drink some milk.
Well, fortunately, there's been enough consumer pushback that we've actually seen a tipping point hit with RBGH. It's also called RBST. And right now, starting about 2 years ago, there's been a huge trend among dairies to stop using it. And so you'll find on our website at responsibletechnology.org a list of where you can find dairies that don't use it. And it's more than one-third of the top 100 dairies in the U.S. And also Starbucks has committed not to use it. In their company-owned stores, Kroger's has decided to take it out of their brand name, Publix out of their brand name. So it's quite a thing that's going on. In fact, it's backed Monsanto into a corner. And so over the summer last year, they actually asked the FDA and the FTC to make it illegal for companies to label on their products that they don't use RBGH. And the FDA and FTC dismissed it and said we're not going to do it. So Monsanto started going to states, and they are now approaching state after state trying to get their agriculture departments or their legislatures to pass a law that will make it impossible for dairies to be using this label. And because some dairy products are sold around the country, if a single state passes it, it means that these large dairies will have to stop labeling their products as free from RBGH or not be able to sell in that state. So this was started in October in Pennsylvania, and there was such an outpouring against it that the governor nixed the rule that had been put forth by the agriculture secretary. It then went to Ohio, and Ohio passed a law that sort of halfway regulated these labels, so it was a partial victory for Monsanto. It's being looked at in Indiana, at Utah, and Kansas. In fact, we think there's about 20 states that are about to introduce these things, and so people should look out for it wherever they are, and let their regulators and legislators know that this is a sham. It turns out that the milk from cows treated with RBGH is significantly different than natural, normal, healthy milk. The milk has much higher levels of a hormone called insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1. Now, high levels of IGF-1 actually transfers from milk into humans and increases our levels of IGF-1. Women with high levels of IGF-1 are 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer. Men are 4 times more likely to develop prostate cancer. IGF-1 is linked to colon cancer and lung cancer and other cancers. And it's also linked to higher levels of fraternal twins. So the eating, in my opinion, you don't want to eat dairy products from cows that have been injected with this RBGH. In my opinion, it would be much healthier to avoid it. And so they're trying to convince these legislators that it's an unfair disadvantage for farmers who want to use the injections, and they're trying to convince them that there's no difference in the milk. But if you track it, you find, for example, when the Canadian scientists did an evaluation of how the FDA had approved RBGH, they were appalled. They wrote a huge, thick report describing how the FDA completely overlooked certain evidence of harm and never asked for the right studies to be done. And so the scientists in Canada were concerned about the health dangers, but they testified that they were being pressured to approve it, which they thought it was unsafe, and that documents were stolen from a locked file cabinet, and that Monsanto offered them a bribe of $1 to $2 million to approve it without further study. And then when a Fox TV station in Florida was going to do a 5-part news series to blow the whistle on RBGH, threatening letters from Monsanto's attorney ultimately canceled the series and caused the reporters to be fired because they refused to lie on television and say that there was no difference between the milk from cows treated with RBGH and
healthy milk. Oh, that just makes my blood boil.
Yeah, it goes on and on.
I would like to know, do you know any specific lawmakers who support this? I'd like to inundate them with emails.
Who support the use of RBGH?
Yeah, or any kind of genetically modified food.
Well, certainly the Secretary of Agriculture is very pro-GM. They always have a pro-GM Secretary of Agriculture.
What's his name? Do you know?
There's a new one. I met Johansson last year, but he's since stepped down. Someone else stepped in, and I don't know his name. But I would say that a good place to go is Tom Harkin is the chairman of the Agriculture Committee in the Senate, and he's not necessarily a pro-GM guy, which gives us ability for him to actually listen. So, you know, you could probably email him and ask him to have a hearing on these products, which you have evidence now that they're unsafe and have been forced onto the market based on industry and manipulation and political collusion and that consumers need to know about these problems, and they need to have choice.
And what's his name, Harbin or Harkin?
Tom Harkin.
Okay.
There's a picture of me and Tom Harkin on my website, actually.
Okay.
I gave him my book in May.
What can we do to help?
Well, a good question.
Excuse me.
There's a number of things. First of all, the main thing is to protect yourself against the dangerous genetically engineered foods. And this is not just an altruist, this is not just a personal thing. It also turns out to be very effective for driving them off the market. So if you stop buying a particular product that you used to eat, but now you find it has GMOs, let them know. You know, send an email.
And there's nothing on the packaging, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to figure out what's GMO by looking at our list of ingredients on our website and memorizing the soy, corn, cotton, canola, and some of the major derivatives like soy lecithin and high fructose corn syrup and dextrose and maltodextrin. So you can let the companies know. So that's one thing. Two, you could pass on information about GMOs. On our website, we have a free monthly syndicated column, which you can give, you know, put on your website, put in your magazines, put everywhere, send it everywhere you want. If you go to seedsofdeception.com, which is our other site, you can listen to an hour-long lecture. You can download it onto your iPod or into a CD, pass it, burn it for other people, pass it on. You know, share the information with others. We have books and DVDs and CDs and all that also available, educational materials available for sale. Our institute, our nonprofit institute, the Institute for Responsible Technology, is needing financial support because we have a program to end the genetic engineering of the food supply within the next couple of years. We want a person to be the liaison to religious organizations, a person to be a liaison to medical organizations, a person to be a liaison to schools and communities, another one with health-conscious shoppers and the natural food industry. Fortunately, we've helped to inspire virtually the entire natural food industry to remove all remaining GM ingredients from their products starting this year. And that's very good news, and it'll give people plenty of non-GMO options and will help get the ball rolling to hit our tipping point. If someone is in a school, if someone is a medical practitioner, if someone is a leader in a religious organization, they should get in touch with us to get the specific materials that we can provide to distribute through your channels, and so that the group, the people you deal with, can learn how to avoid eating these dangerous products.
How did you get into this?
Well, I went to a lecture about 11 years ago, and it was a scientist, a molecular biologist, who had been doing genetic engineering research, and he was a visionary. He realized, this was back just before, or just as the seeds were being planted for most of the new GM crops in 1996, and he conveyed to us, really, that the products of an infant science were about to be fed to the entire population and released into the environment where they could never be recalled. Now, this last point is very interesting. When you have a chemical spill, it dissipates over time. When you introduce a genetically engineered crop, it can cross-pollinate with non-GM crops and even weedy relatives and self-perpetuate in the environment forever. We have no technology to clean up the gene pool today. It's like trying to figure out how to recall genetically engineered salmon from the ocean or mosquitoes from the air. And there are genetically engineered salmon and mosquitoes in laboratories waiting to be introduced. It's the same with the corn pollen that has contaminated the indigenous corn varieties in Mexico. This self-propagating genetic pollution could outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste. And we're making decisions now that will affect, theoretically, all future generations. And most of what we knew, or what we thought we knew about the DNA and genetic technology when this was developed, turns out to be wrong.
Somebody had said something to me one time about, and I'd like for you to tell me if this is true or not, because I don't have any idea, that genetically modified seeds don't reproduce like our normal seeds. Like you can't take these seeds off your plants and plant them next year, that you have to go by and get the special genetically modified ones from the factory or something and plant them. Is that question clear?
Yes, there is something called Terminator technology, which was developed by the USDA and Delta Land and Pine and others, and it is a technology which has not yet been introduced in commercial seeds, but it is exactly what you describe, where if it is introduced, it means that farmers would be producing sterile seeds, and so they wouldn't be able to replant them.
That's frightening.
Well, it's very frightening because this is being it was designed to target the developing countries where 1.4 billion farmers save their seeds. Now, the biotech industry wants to convert those. They own a lot of the seed supply, and they want to convert those seed savers into customers. Now, this has enormous implications. Right now, with 1.4 billion farmers saving seeds, they have an enormous genetic variety because they have seeds that have been growing in their climate and geography for generations. And so there's a huge difference in the genetic structure of seeds from farm to farm and from region to region. And that gives us food security. If there is some kind of fungus or blight or disease that happens, it typically will not attack all of the different varieties of genetics in a particular species, just some. And so having hundreds or thousands of different genetics out there, you can find seeds that will resist that particular blight, and we have safety in numbers and diversity. But when the biotech industry takes over a particular crop, as they did with soy, corn, cotton, and canola, the number of inputs, the varieties, reduced dramatically, as much as a hundredfold. I mean, huge drop. So if they get their way and start taking over the commercial seed supply around the world, they're going to shrink the biodiversity of the earth and put our food security at risk.
Wow. The same person also told me that heirloom seeds were safe seeds to buy. Is that true?
Well, right now, the heirloom seeds are not genetically engineered. But just remember, if you're planting a garden, then there's only like three different types of crops that you would probably get for vegetables that would be GMO. One is corn, one is zucchini, and one is crookneck squash. You're probably not going to grow canola or soybeans or cotton. And so what you have to do is ask your seed dealer to confirm that the seeds that you want to buy are not genetically engineered.
Okay.
Now, you did mention about the Terminator technology. Right now, the way farmers have to buy GMOs is they have to sign a contract that they won't replant the company's seeds, but that they'll sell them all or use them all. But it'd have to go back each year to the company to buy new seeds. And so Monsanto has hired Pinkerton Security and Royal Canadian Mounted Police retirees to go around and check these farmers to make sure they're not saving seeds. And if they think that they are, they'll send them threatening letters demanding a settlement or even bring them to court. Monsanto's made close to $200 million off of farmers. In fact, a famous case from a friend of mine, Percy Schmeisser, who's a farmer in Western Canada, he was contaminated by passing trucks that were trucking canola seeds to market. And the trucks blew the seeds onto his property. They grew, and they were harvested with the rest of his seeds and replanted. And he was sued by Monsanto because he had their intellectual property growing on his field. And Monsanto won.
I heard about that.
Yes, it's just outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous.
You know, it actually, I hate to say it, but it brings up hate in me for these people that do this.
Well, they're not on my Christmas list. But, you know, what I say to people is, you know, this brings up a lot of emotions. I mean, anger, fear, sadness. What I say is there's an opportunity to digest that in such a way, to use that energy of emotion and turn it into action so that we make the transition in our digestive life so that we decide what we're going to eat and not let it be dictated to us by the biotech industry or their enforcement wing in the FDA. So we can instead of feeling like victims, we can feel like victors, where we say, okay, I'm going to take better control over the diet for my family. And it takes a little time to learn which brands are GM. I mean, if you go and buy tomato sauce, I picked up a Ragu chunky tomato sauce off the shelf and looked at it. It had soybean oil and high fructose corn syrup. So I put it back. I picked up Ragu light and looked at that, and it had olive oil, which is not genetically engineered, and no corn sweetener. So just by knowing what the ingredients are that are genetically engineered, I could completely change brands and choose only the brands to bring into my house that are free from GMOs. GMOs means genetically modified organisms.
I buy only canola oil, so now it makes me feel like an idiot for buying only that for my family because I thought it was healthier.
A lot of people were tricked into thinking that canola oil was healthy. It turns out about 79% of the crop in Canada is genetically engineered not to die when sprayed with herbicide. So unless that canola oil says organic or non-GMO, it is genetically engineered.
Wow. It really does make me get upset. So is there a connection with Codex?
Oh, yeah. Codex.
Let's see how much time we have. Hold on.
Yeah, Codex, they would love to set it up so that no country can be required to label it, that it has to be accepted. I mean, Codex and the WTO, these are organizations that are designed to favor trade for the transnational corporations and to overrun local laws associated with food safety and with environment and with customary cultural prohibitions. And so you can be sure that the moneyed interests are trying to work through the Codex to dictate terms through these large multinational, transnational treaties. And so I have some friends of mine that go to these Codex meetings and argue on behalf of consumers that what the United States government and others are trying to do is wrong.
Have you worked some with Reba Labow and Jim Turner?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know them. I know them well, yes.
Good. I support what they do so much.
Yeah, it's great.
So is there anything that we've missed that you want to make sure we put out there? We've got about 10 minutes.
Well, for those that don't have access to the web, they can get books and CDs by calling a toll-free number, 888-717-7000, 888-717-7000, or go to responsibletechnology.org. I think that the key is that it's not a popular topic to discuss because it's been kept out of the news. In fact, it is so under the radar that if you ask an average American, have you ever eaten a genetically engineered food in your life, 60% say no, 15% say I don't know, and yet most people eat it every day.
Does your organization have some pamphlets that we could get to distribute to schools and government?
We are actually right in the middle of producing a number of pamphlets that will be available for this campaign for healthier eating in America. So get on our website and get subscribed to our newsletter. And as the pamphlets get, we can go out only once a month, so we won't be inundated. And as our materials become developed, we will let everyone know, and it could be available for order or for download. Absolutely. In fact, one of the big things that people can do locally is we have a completely turnkey grassroots program called the GM Free School Campaign, where parents and community members can get a 60-page manual, get a video to show, have their own website, their own listserv, a whole strategy, pre-written articles to be customized for your local paper. Very effective, not just in getting the schools to switch to GMOs, but even more importantly, to use the campaign as an opportunity to educate the entire community, to educate people through the paper, to educate the parents, to educate, just all the different organizations. And people will rally around protecting children who are most at risk. And it's true that children are most at risk from the potential dangers of genetically engineered
mm-hmm.
foods.
I'm gonna be down at my children's school, I can tell you that.
Absolutely. So what you do is you get on our site, and then you just there's a place for you to email our director of the GM Free School Campaign. She will get in touch with you and provide you with all the materials that you need. And then you can also hook up with other communities doing the same thing to figure out what's the best approach. And we don't just recommend just going immediately to the administration and trying to get them to change. We have a video called Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals. It's 28 minutes, and it is like instant activism. You just play the DVD, and you just ask who wants to work on a GM-free school campaign, and the hands go up. People realize that they need to do something after seeing this video. So we encourage people to show it often and gather the names of people that are interested and show it again and gather the names. And that way you build a huge contingent of people who want to see change and who in the meantime are learning about the problem and learning how to buy non-GM products for themselves and their families.
Who is it best to address in the school? I mean, the county people or just the principals and teachers?
Every school is different. A lot of it depends. Some schools have no kitchens, really. They just heat the products that are sent from a central kitchen. Others cook their own. So you'd have to figure out from the school system. One principal said a key person to talk to is the guidance counselor. But it really depends, and I think one of the things that we find is if you keep showing it to groups and showing it, and you pass around a bunch of DVDs to your group and they then show it to others and have house parties or show it to the PTA, you end up with people from the school in your group. I mean, one time I gave a presentation on a GM-free school campaign in Mendocino, California, to a group of the community there, and I said, okay, whoever wants to stay behind to work on a GM-free school campaign, please meet me on stage. And there were 17 people, and I said, let's first go around and introduce ourselves and what we do. There were three members of the school board, the school superintendent, the high school principal, some teachers and parents. So, and then when I gave a talk in Marin County, two people in the audience that decided to work on a GM-free school campaign was the food service director and her assistant. And they didn't need anyone else to make the decision. They said, mm-hmm. we can do this on our own. We don't need you to talk to a principal. We buy the product. So it all depends on who you have by the time you're ready to make the approach and what the structure of your school is.
Okay. It's good to know that.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have thought about going to the food people themselves because I thought they would have been too low on the totem pole.
It depends on their receptivity. I mean, some people don't want to deal with change. But the thing is, you want to go when you have some numbers behind you, because if you go and there's a no, let's say you just go as a one person and there's a no, then you have to sort of uphill battle to convince them to change.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go representing 50 or 100 people and the doctor in the community and maybe some teachers and parents and there's a large number there, then it's harder for them to just say no, and they say, well, we got to look into it, and if they look into it, there's no way they're going to say no because they realize there are problems. In fact, in the movie Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, there's a description of a school in Appleton, Wisconsin, which overnight shifted its food from the normal junk food that kids eat every day to good, healthy food. And they found that the behavior of the kids changed dramatically to the better.
But that doesn't surprise me a bit. It really doesn't. Okay, Jim, tell them one more time where they can find this really great book.
Sure.
On your what's your website again?
Well, I'm going to give you a different website because there's a way to get into that website, just the name of the book, geneticroulette.com.
Oh, geneticroulette.com. It's a hardback book. It's a really nice book. It's got lots of descriptions, lots of research. It's worth the little bit of time it takes to read it.
In fact, you can skim the whole thing in 1 or 2 hours because right across from the table of contents, in the suggestion to readers, it describes how you can skim it, read it as a casual reader, or get an in-depth look. Because every page has a way of an executive summary or a way to read it very quickly. I talked to someone, he said he read it cover to cover in 2 hours by following those directions and reading it at a pace that he wanted.
Well, thanks for what you do, Jim. Somebody's got to do it. You've done a good job. Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure.
And anything I can do to help you, I want to do
well,
it. Well,
this is very helpful, is to get the word out. I mean, there are other speakers on GMOs that we can talk about offline that we can,
okay.
They want to interview. Just keep informing your listeners so that it doesn't go away until it goes away.
I'll do it. And thank you. I'd like for you to come back sometime.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Good night.
Bye-bye.